Welcoming to Sounds of the Season, I'm Kevin Kloss. Tonight, we launch a four-part series all about music discovery. Over the next 4 weeks, we'll be diving into some of the best minds who are analyzing new music, and we'll talk about what music has influenced new and up-and-coming artists, as well as hearing what are some of the new artists that these musical experts are listening to. Tonight, we kick off our series by having a conversation with Syracuse University professor David Yaffe. David, thanks so much for being a part of the show tonight.
Thank you for having me.
David, through the course of your career, you've had the opportunity to analyze a number of different artists and a number of different styles of music. You've written books on Joni Mitchell and Bob Dylan. And as we get started tonight, I kind of want to focus on Bob Dylan. In 2011, you wrote the book Like a Complete Unknown. Bob Dylan, not a new name. We're familiar with his work from Like a Rolling Stone to Subterranean Memphis Blues to Tambourine Man. He's got a number of well-known songs. But what is it about Bob Dylan that intrigues you, that you come back to his work again and again, and that you wanted to share his story in that 2011 book?
So Bob Dylan hitchhikes. He drops out of college. He does one semester at the University of Minnesota, Minneapolis, St. Paul, doesn't show up for class, really. And he drops out after a semester. And he eventually hitchhikes to New York because he wants to meet Woody Guthrie. And it's 1961. He actually rolls into town when Kennedy is giving his Ask Not speech. And it's the peak of the folk revival. And so he just shows up on McDougal Street and he finds couches to crash on. And he shows up at basket houses and he was playing the same from a similar repertoire that a lot of people are playing from. There's no reason to think that he would be special. And one of the first things he writes is a song to Woody. But he sings it to the tune of a Woody Guthrie song. So the melody's not original, but the lyrics are original. Hey, hey, Woody Guthrie, what's your song? And he gets an audition with Vanguard Records, which was John Baez's label, and they pass on him. And so he kind of thinks he's finished. And this is a famous story. So he is playing, he'd already been recorded once. He was playing harmonica with Harry Belafonte on a recording of Midnight Special. That was his first recording. What I believe is his second recording is with a folk singer named Caroline Hester. And so they have a gig at... So they have a gig at, I think, the Bottom Line, or one of those clubs. I think it was the Bottom Line. No, the Gaslight. They have a gig at the Gaslight. And then Caroline Hester is recording with John Hammond. And there's a bit of pressure on Columbia because they haven't signed up any folk music, and folk music is the big craze. And John Hammond hadn't signed anybody for a while. He was known as the man with the golden years. He signed Count Basie. He signed Billie Holiday. He signed... Benny Goodman, but that was all in the 30s, and this was 1961. It had been a while.
I was just gonna say, so it had been a while.
Yeah, I think they probably looked at him as a has-been, really, and he wanted to prove himself. And so then here's something that's completely out of the arena of jazz. It's something else. And so he had this habit of reading the New York Times in the recording studio, which put off a lot of people. So he's reading the Times, and Robert Shelton, who was a copy editor and a freelancer for the Times, he was like a stringer for the Times, he reviews a show by Caroline Hester that has Bob Dylan in it. And then he sees that the same scruffy kid that's in that picture is right there in the recording studio, and one thing leads to another, and he signs him up. And when he records his first album, Bob Dylan, and it has Song to Woody and then a bunch of folk standards. Just typical. And it was made very cheaply and it didn't make any money. And Bob Dylan was known as Hammond's Folly. And Hammond had a chance to And Dylan had a chance to record a follow-up, and that follow-up was Free Will and Bob Dylan. And the rest is history.
When someone has as much work on the table as Bob does over the course of his career, I know it's difficult to just pick out one or two songs that really jump off the page. But if you had to pick one that's not one of his best-known songs, but it's a song that you think is not only underappreciated, but it's also a song that you make a part of your playlist. So if you're going to introduce someone to Bob Dylan and you want to play them a track that maybe they haven't heard before, what's a song you go to?
Well, one of those songs would definitely be Up to Me. Up to Me is a song that was recorded during the Blood on the Track sessions, but not released. And it wasn't released until 1985 when there was a greatest hits box called Biograph. And that's when Up to Me got released. And he's never performed it live, ever.
So there's no live recording of that song?
No, and there's no alternative recording that I know of, although I'm sure there will eventually be a Blood on the Tracks Variorum as part of the bootleg series. And then maybe we'll hear another version of Up to Me. It probably is more than one version. But I don't know. I haven't seen the studio log, so I don't know. But that's a very powerful and devastating song. And sometimes when someone who's not really a Dylan fan loves a song like that, that's when I know, oh my God, it's not just me and these other kooks that are obsessed with Dylan, but somebody who's not obsessed with Dylan can see that this is a very powerful song that's more of a scientific analysis.
Now, as a part of our four-part series, Sounds of the Season, we want to leave time for sound. And by that, I want to play some of the songs that are going to come up in our conversation to give you a sense of what do these songs sound like. So when we talk about a song that is maybe influenced by a certain artist or vice versa, an artist that has influenced new songs that are coming out, I want you to get a chance to hear that. So as we take our break right now, we're going to hear that song that David just mentioned to us, Up to Me. We're going to hear that song. Take a quick break, then we're going to come back and have more of our conversation with Syracuse University Professor David Yaffe. You're listening to Sounds of the Season on WAER Syracuse.
WAER is happy to be part of your community, but we realize that a lot of times you're on the go. Or maybe you can't connect with WAER. And that's why we've developed the WAER mobile app, so you can take us with you wherever you go. Stream our broadcast, browse our website, and listen to the latest on-demand audio. Available in the Apple and Google Play Store. Just search for WAER.
Welcome back. You're listening to Sounds of the Season on WAER. I'm Kevin Kloss, and tonight is part one of our special four-part series as we dive headfirst into music discovery. Summer is now upon us and in full swing, and with the summer season comes the need for some fresh music. And tonight we're talking with Syracuse University Professor David Yaffe. We opened up our break hearing a lesser-known track that David recommended to us called Up to Me by Bob Dylan, and that last song we played coming out of the break was Alice Merton and No Roots. David, as part of your role here at Syracuse University, you teach a course introducing musical icons and probably some artists who you and I would think of as legendary. You go through and have conversations with the students about these artists, sometimes even playing some of their work for them. So as you've gone through this process, and obviously you've got to meet with a lot of these students, are they aware of a lot of the artists that maybe you and I would think of as legendary, whether that's Bob Dylan, Joni Mitchell, Elton John? Do they have an appreciation for those kind of artists?
The ones I teach, yes. A lot of my students are majors in the Bandier program in music industry. And so they're more eclectic than what would be typical for their generation. Just as an example, a couple of years ago, I had a student named Josie, and she was named for the Steely Dan song Josie. And when Steely Dan came to the Landmark in October of 2016, I had this group of students, including Josie, sitting right behind me, and I got to see that look of wonder and joy in her face when they started playing the song. So that was pretty amazing. And also to watch these 20-year-olds who loved this music that I loved when I was 14.
Now, you told me prior to this recording about a course you were teaching where you basically had to narrow down the number of artists that you were going to be able to discuss throughout the semester. And you basically put the power in the hands of the students to say, let's figure out who you want to talk about. Just talk a little bit about maybe what you discovered through that process.
Well, you have 12 weeks in a semester, and I wanted to do a class with 12 songwriters, singer-songwriters. So I had a list of about 20, and then just from the wisdom of crowds, I had a sense of who I could vote off the island. And of course, usually when I'm teaching, I've been teaching for a long time, usually like it's hard to, usually don't get to do the final thing on your syllabus. There's usually some kind of spillover and the final thing on the syllabus doesn't happen. So, you know, there were like two artists that we didn't get to anyway. But I had about 20, and then I was narrowed it down to 12, and I just got a sense of asking them, well, what do you want to know more about? What are you interested in? And there were some people they weren't familiar. So I said, well, they said, well, let's play something. So I would play something on YouTube.
Who were they not familiar with?
They were not familiar with PJ Harvey. They were not familiar with Lucinda Williams. They must have been familiar with Beck, but they weren't interested in Beck, which was a bit shocking to me.
As a lead up to our program tonight, David, you and I have talked a little bit about your interaction with the students, and you told me they really like Nirvana, they really like Kurt Cobain, and I wasn't real surprised with that. And I guess something I shouldn't have been surprised about, but that just caught me off guard, was when you told me that they really love Amy Winehouse.
Oh, yeah. But they think of Amy Winehouse like she's Janis Joplin.
That's what I was curious to know. So for that generation, 20 to 22-year-olds, Amy Winehouse is...
Because she's been dead for a long time now.
Right.
I mean, she's been dead since 2011. That's 7 years. So if you're 20 and you love Amy Winehouse, that means that she died when you were 13. So it's sort of like, I'm sure that to them, I mean, they love Nirvana, for example. They love Nirvana. But like Kurt Cobain is as dead as John Lennon. Whereas I was in college when Kurt Cobain died. That reverberated throughout the campus in such a shockwave. Even though we knew that he had attempted it a few weeks earlier, it was still just so horrible. But I, you know, just like it was horrible for so many people, you know, when John Lennon got shot. But I think to them, Nirvana is just classic rock.
I was going to say, do you have any, having dealt with these students throughout the semester, any indication what makes Nirvana, that band that lives on? Is it in some way the fact that maybe the act was cut short by Kurt Cobain's death, or any indication as to what makes them so popular, other than maybe just being one of those bands that sort of paved the way for a lot of heavier rock and roll?
Well, some people think that Pearl Jam is just as good or better than Nirvana. I have always preferred Nirvana to Pearl Jam, but there are people who I respect who feel the opposite. I mean, as you know, Pearl Jam has many, many passionate fans. But I guess for me and for a lot of them, with Nirvana, you get this Icarus myth, this Werther myth that you also get with Elliott Smith. And then you get with, you know, Club 27, which Kurt Cobain's part of and Amy Winehouse became part of.
And just to fill in any gaps that may have come up in this conversation, when we hear 27 Club, as David referenced, what that is 27 Club is a way to refer to artists, musicians, or actors who have passed away at the age of 27. So as David mentioned, Kurt Cobain, part of Club 27, Amy Winehouse, also part of Club 27, and maybe a lesser-known artist, guitar player Thomas Fechte. He is part of Club 27. He was the guitarist for the band Surfer's Blood. And to pay honor to his work in that group, we're going to play a song by them called I'm Not Ready as we head into our break right now. So we're going to hear that song. Then we're going to come back with more of our conversation with Syracuse University professor David Yaffe as we continue to discuss music discovery right here on Sounds of the Season. You're listening to WAER, your local NPR station from Syracuse University.
WAER is a resource for news, information, analysis, and a wide range of perspectives that inspire you to think and help you grow. We're all about independent journalism for independent thinkers. We're supported by listeners who value independence in their lives and in their communities. Support the values that you want reflected in your journalism and in the information and perspectives available to you and to everyone in your community. Give at WAER.org.
Welcome back to Sounds of the Season on WAER. I'm Kevin Kloss. Tonight is part one of our four-part series diving headfirst into music discovery. We're continuing our conversation tonight with Syracuse University professor David Yaffe. Now, David, not too long ago, I heard well-known author Malcolm Gladwell theorize that we have seen the last great rock band that is going to take the country by storm and bring the fragmented audience together. Would you agree with the fact that we're not going to see another band who can do things like what we saw the Beatles do, where when everyone came together under one sound and really appreciated that kind of a group?
Oh, I don't think we'll ever go back to that place. I mean, especially if you think that, like, the Beatles obviously became much more huge mm-hmm. than anybody, including themselves, could have possibly imagined. Because it's not just that their children love them. Their grandchildren love them. Come on. I mean, in 1965, if you were going to say, you know, in the year 2018, they're going to be 15-year-olds that are so crazy about this music, you know? I mean, that just sort of seems like something from the Jetsons or something, that they still love the Beatles, that they do. No, I think Malcolm Gladwell is right. But, of course, something amazing could come along tomorrow. I think, obviously, there are a lot of people that are hugely talented and are really great and utilizing the technology that's available to make sounds that are exciting and new. And but something like the Beatles.
Okay, so let's scale it down from the Beatles. Mm-hmm. Is the audience going to be willing, you think, to come together and appreciate a singular sound like that?
No, I don't think so. Not when everything is available all the time. I don't think so. Think about it. People were listening to the radio, and they were listening to AM radio, mm-hmm. by the way. FM radio starts in the late 60s, and it's an underground thing for a while. So AM radio is still the place to go for the mainstream. The Beatles were completely a phenomenon of AM radio. All of those hits they had, they were AM radio hits. And where else was there to go? Eventually, FM, you know. Then you have two frequencies. And FM was weird. FM, like, people play, like, entire records with no ads. it was a funky experimental thing at first. But anyway, it's like you couldn't tape the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. You couldn't put it on DVR. You couldn't watch it on YouTube. It happened. It was over. And if you missed it, then you missed, like, the most important thing of your generation.
So, David, as we start to wrap things up a little bit this evening, one final question I do want to ask you. We've talked a lot about either musical groups who have influenced current artists or artists that we enjoy for one reason or another. But what's an artist who, the first time you heard them, you didn't really love them, but when you gave them a second chance, after a second or maybe a third listen, you started to appreciate more what they were doing? Who's an artist you needed to listen to a second time?
I went on an Elliott Smith binge sort of after the fact because mm-hmm. I liked the songs, but I just sort of went into a binge. Or here's another thing. Sometimes, like, I'll find something and I'll think, wow, what would my life have been if I'd known it then? And so I belatedly got into Portishead. Someone got me into Portishead and I got totally hooked on it. And I thought, oh my God. You know, when I was a senior, this stuff was out when I was like a junior and a senior in college. I graduated from college in 1995. I'm 45 years old. So when I was 21, 22, I was listening to a lot of Mahler, and my classical music friends and I, we would like argue about which recording was better, which conductor was better for which symphony, things like that. Things that were totally insufferable to most people, including each other. But it wasn't, and of course I knew Nirvana, and I knew Radiohead, mm-hmm. and I knew Beck, but I didn't know Portishead. And I thought, oh my God, what would my life have been if I'd gone down this path? Where would it have taken me? I'll never know. You know, there's that story about when Joyce and Yeats met, and Joyce says, we have arrived too late. You are too old to be influenced by me. I just wonder what it would have been like if I could have been influenced at age 21 by Portishead. But I also like to think that I still have an open heart, and I have an open mind, so that something could still affect me as much as it did when I was younger. Even though I have a lot of other things floating in there now, I still want to have that capacity for, you know, falling in love with something.
So it seems only fitting then that we will close tonight's show with a song by Portishead. David Yaffe, professor at Syracuse University, thank you so much for being a part of the program this evening, talking to us about Bob Dylan and really laying a lot of the groundwork for the conversation to follow the next 3 weeks on Music Discovery.
Oh, thank you for having me. This has been a pleasure.
And we'll be back next week. Next week, we'll be talking with Jess Novak from the Jess Novak Band, local artist here in Syracuse, contributor to the Syracuse New Times. She'll be talking a little bit about music discovery from a local perspective. I'm Kevin Kloss. You've been listening to Sounds of the Season on WAER, your local NPR station from Syracuse University.